This is the Texas Standard. I'm David Brown. After yesterday's broadcast, which concluded with a roundup of reaction to the Orlando shooting from Texans on social media, we received a comment from a listener who noticed what he considered to be a conspicuous absence of something in the conversation. Dear Texas Standard, really? No Texans on social media use the words terrorism, Islamist, ISIS? His point may have been to suggest we were playing the political correctness game. I can certainly assure you that was far from the intent. But the listener's comment goes to something much bigger, perhaps. This is from CNN yesterday, anchor Chris Cuomo interviewing the presumptive Democratic presidential nominee, Hillary Clinton. Let's listen.
Do you believe that this is radical Islamism or radical Islamic terror? Will you use those words, and if not, why?
You know, whether you call it radical jihadism, radical Islamism, I think they mean the same thing. I'm happy to say either.
Politicians on the right seized upon that as a kind of watershed moment, whether it was or wasn't. What's the significance? Jennifer Wingard teaches rhetoric, among other subjects, at the University of Houston. Welcome to the Texas Standard.
Thank you very much. I'm glad to be here.
It appears that there are certain magic words in the political conversation right now. Why is so much weight being placed on whether politicians use phrases like radical Islamism versus, say, radical Islamic terror?
There's a lot of weight right now on these words, and I would say that these words have carried a lot of weight in our country post 9/11. That was a very big watershed moment for our country, as it should have been. I'm not trying to downplay that moment, but that is when terrorism became the lingua franca for a way our country began to live, from the speeches, from the development of the Patriot Act, the way we had to, if you see something, say something, All of those kinds of local and national works became the way we began to police ourselves. So, and fortunately or unfortunately, terrorism began to be tied to radical Islam in very, very specific ways.
Let me follow up on that, because I noticed something interesting on Sunday morning in the first reports of official reaction to the shooting in Orlando. A great deal was made of whether officials were viewing this incident as, and I'm going to the quote here, an act of terrorism. It was almost as if it transcended left or right, but actually communicated something about the very nature of the crime. Are we well served by these verbal shorthands?
Well, I think, of course, an act of terrorism, the nature, if we take it out of these political realms, yes, the act of terror is to incite fear after the fact, right? So it is to go into a space, have a horrific crime, and then have people change their ways of life. Like, that is the definition of terrorism. Outside of radical jihadism, outside of radical anything, is that when you want to incite terror, it's a strong arm way to incite change. So that is that kind of stripped version of this. So it was very interesting when President Obama first spoke about Orlando. He said, this is an act of terror, mm-hmm. and this is a hate crime. So he joined those two together without placing it in our political language around Islamic terror.
Have you noticed any other magic words in the rhetoric surrounding this incident?
Well, of course, gun control, right? So we're back to the Second Amendment, that regardless of the hate, regardless of what happens to this individual, if we took guns off the street, and then it becomes an argument around, well, bad people will get the guns no matter what. So we end up in this kind of bifurcated discourse where the Democrats are pushing for gun control legislation and pushing the political discourse in one direction, where the right is very much pushing toward this kind of radical terror, Islamic jihadism as an answer. But what's kind of fallen in the middle is the fact that this happened in National Pride Weekend to a particular class of individuals, the LGBTQ community, who have been under political attack, both with all of these bathroom laws, as well as other laws in North Carolina and in Alabama recently.
That's an interesting issue, because it makes me wonder if there's a danger that we're parsing our words so carefully, that we're so focused on the minutiae of the rhetoric, that maybe we're no longer really communicating with each other, that, you know, the person speaking and the person listening, something's lost.
Well, I do think that part of what happens in this rhetoric, when we start to parse out, it is this group that is needing protection, it is this group that is committing the crimes, and we start to parse out all of these identities so neatly, is in a convoluted situation such as Orlando, when multiple groups are not only the victims, but the perpetrator also carries multiple identities,
right,
as we're starting to tease out. What that then gives us is it gives us this fancy term in the academy we call the hierarchy of oppression. Like, who is more oppressed? Who is more victimized? And it really separates any kind of coalition building that can happen between people who want to find protection and allies or to create change. It becomes a way to individualize the argument and place it on a particular individual or a particular individual's beliefs and then their group affiliation, instead of looking at a more systemic conversation that could happen.
Jennifer Wingard teaches rhetoric, among other subjects, at the University of Houston. Professor, thanks so much for speaking with us.
You're very welcome. Thank you.